As he was close to completing his book titled The Self-Made Tapestry, Philip Ball tells us, "I found myself watching the sun go down from an empty beach in West Wales. The sky was livid with salmon-colored bands of clouds. The shore was being washed with the steady pulse of the sea, and a stream threaded its braided course across the wrinkled brow of the sandy beach to the water's edge, where a white foam frothed on top of the turbulent eddies. Behind me rose rugged cliffs, each cradling countless miniature replicas of itself in a craggy hierarchy. Along the cliff path, I had noticed earlier in the day the spiral arrangement of spikes on the gorse bushes, the five-petaled wildflowers. And I don't think it was until that moment that I truly appreciated how the patterns that I had spent the last several months describing were far from arcane curiosities or the virtual creations of a computer, but indeed the blueprints for nature." Words of Philip Ball in his study, The Self-Made Tapestry. And for him, he's just had an experience of beauty and wonder, inspired by what he calls a self-made tapestry. As we stand before and below a naturescape rendered painstakingly and exquisitely as a handmade tapestry by artist Peg McDade, we have a sense, too, of intricate patterns and dynamic energy and a brilliant array of colors. And the scale of the tapestry may take our breath away. It's titled Dynamic Interplay. The piece is 22 feet wide and, with its extensions, 15 and a half feet high, and it is displayed at the Buckingham Performing Arts Center at Wyoming Seminary in Kingston. The celebration of color is a constant in Peg McDade's work, so even when she moves from naturescape to what we might call communityscape, her color palette is broad and her design dynamic. This tapestry is titled In and of This Place, rendering the human history of a community, though the relationship with the natural world is a vital element as well. And with the inclusion of bells in the symbolic landscape, Peg McDade manages to include the sense of sound to stimulate even more here than our sense of sight and touch. Touch, so tactile are these fulsome fibers. In and of This Place is one of the works to be featured in the exhibition Peg McDade, Fiber Artworks, Then and Now, Art to Wear, Tapestry, opening at the Artworks Gallery in downtown Scranton this Friday, May 5th, and running through May 30th. Peg McDade is a rostered artist in the Arts and Education Program of the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, and she has taught fiber arts and other art courses in the graduate and undergraduate programs of Keystone College, Luzerne County Community College, and Marywood University. She also teaches fiber arts at Artworks Gallery for individuals with intellectual disabilities and autism. Peg McDade has presented workshops and lectures to guilds in New York City, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Rochester, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and for the Mid-Atlantic Fiber Association and the Handweavers Guild of America. She has works in many collections in the U.S. and abroad. We'll soon learn that Peg McDade is particularly inspired by her teaching at the Artworks Gallery and Studio, which, as we've heard, is dedicated to serving people with intellectual disabilities and autism, assisting in the exploration of their creative potential and expanding their horizons. Peg McDade paid a visit to the WVIA studios with Caitlin Harrison, program manager at Artworks, and Jacqueline Shattuck, art instructor there and graduate of Keystone College in visual art with a concentration in ceramic sculpture. We began by asking Caitlin Harrison to introduce us to Artworks and its mission.
At Artworks, we celebrate the artists in each of our students that come to the gallery. So we serve adults with intellectual disabilities and students with autism. We try to immerse our students with professional artists. That's the biggest part here, is we want our students to have something to look forward to and to be out in the community just like a professional artist. Their work is phenomenal to see what they are able to create every day, and just the innate sense of design that they have, that's impeccable.
Tell us about the various media in which you work and about how things unfold in a class situation?
I work with mixed media, which encompasses all media. So they come in and we will have a lesson plan. Some of the students are independent study because they know what they want. So they come in and we have one right now who's working on a big fat cat series, which is amazing. It's very impressive. And they will sit down at the table and they'll pick their media. So we'll start with pencil, move to Sharpie, paint, watercolor, acrylic. And maybe if they want to rip some paper, glue, they can do so much. And it's excellent. It's wonderful.
And Peg, what are you teaching?
My connection as a teacher with these wonderful people here, Caitlin and Jackie, is to bring fiber to the fore and let them know that it is an art form. And I do that not just for these lovely students, but for the whole area, and let us hope the world, because it might be a forgotten or a misplaced sort of artwork. It is probably the result of museums calling one a fine art and something else a functional art, as if it couldn't be functional and fine at the same time. So I brought weaving on small, very portable looms and cardboard. In fact, you can make one at home. And we also did whatever anybody else wanted to learn. So they learned to do stitchery. They learned crochet. We have a fantastic crochet artist there who carries around his crochet, his huge crochet something, and he also carries around a bag of yarns with him, so he's well into it. So we crochet, and some people wanted to learn to knit. However, it's a little harder to learn with two tools than one, so crochet seems to be on the top. They had an exhibit of their own work, and I think this is fantastic. Some of them have gotten medals for this and that. And what I like about these students is that they did not need to go to a professional art school. It is endemic that they understand texture, they understand color, they understand line. You do not need to go to art school, and should be appreciated for this intrinsic talent that all of them have.
Is there an umbrella organization under which Artworks operates?
Yes. Keystone Community Resources is our mothership of the company, and they allow us to facilitate classes. So Artworks is the sister company in which we're able to have fun.
And it is fun. When I go to art openings, I have a feeling that I'm in my professional capacity showing up. And I can tell you that I love going to the openings here. It is such fun is what it is. Everybody is smiling and happy and moving around the room. And it is a delight. I don't feel like I professionally have to be there. I really want to be there.
And that says a lot about the spirit that you all create, that it is a celebration.
Absolutely. We encourage our students to participate in the opening receptions. So it's people that might not come to the classes, but they come to see the artwork, or they'll come to see their friends, or they'll come to listen to the live music, because we like to have and support local musicians in the area. And just full circle is truly what it comes down to.
And you have a wonderful facility there. You have a beautiful gallery. The lighting is wonderful. Beautiful walls to show work.
Absolutely. We say that it's like being in Chelsea, but in Scranton, yeah. Pennsylvania.
So you have a series of shows, as any gallery would, in the course of a season or a year. You have Peg's show coming up.
So how the exhibitions work are that we like to exhibit our students' work. We'll work together with the instructors and see whose pieces will flow nicely together, or whose pieces might complement or contrast, and we go through that whole process. So basically, every other month we do a professional artist, and then we switch it to be one of our students or a group of our students, and then we introduce the professional artist again and keep flip-flopping throughout the year. But it gives our students the opportunity to see the professional artwork, because not everybody is able to get out to all the different galleries, but when it's at home, they're able to see it.
Do you have an example of one of your students seeing an exhibit of a professional artist and being inspired in some way? Have you seen that happen?
I did. Every month they get up, they come in on Monday, and there's a new show. They get up and they walk around and they look at the show and they'll ask me questions, and it gives me a chance to expose them to something they might not have seen otherwise.
I know that we had an artist that did paper cuts. And so for the remaining of the month, all of the students wanted to create these paper cut collage pieces, or now Peg's coming in. So we know that the students are, I know, because I've seen some of her students that she's had, they'll see her work and they'll want to recreate or try to recreate their own interpretation of her work, which is really, it's interesting to see their interpretation.
Which is very different than my interpretation. It's particular, according to the emotional content of the work and emotional content and responses of the student.
So you're looking forward to this because it's among this group of people who will be inspired by what you do.
Yes, that is the motivation. Plus, it's time to get out some new work. So we will have new work, and we will also have some older artworks. It's not exactly a retrospective of my work. It's more like an overview of types of work. So there will be a lot of art to wear, custom hand-woven or hand-crocheted or hand-knitted work. And then we also will have some tapestries.
How were you initially drawn to the fiber arts?
I believe I can recall as a child standing next to my aunt's sewing machine. All the other kids are out playing, but I'm inside and I am standing and watching her make lace ruching and smocking and just fascinated. So the fascination has to be there first. And my grandmother also did embroideries in silk, and they were absolutely exquisite, so I was definitely drawn to the luster of silk. And then when I decided to do something myself, I went out and I bought 4 looms from an estate, and I was probably the only person that I shocked them that I would come in and buy 4 looms. It was also in a very large attic, which was about 50 feet long. And under the eaves were these boxes and boxes and boxes of yarn. And I said to the lady, I'd like some yarn. And she said, how much of it? I said, all of it. And the 4 looms. Now, I kept the 2 floor looms. The other were lap looms. I gave those away to kids. And I did not know how to weave. So I took the looms and I took them apart, except one, and I claimed a bedroom. Now, as a mother, what would you do? You would go into the smallest bedroom and call that your studio. Not for long. I really had visions of taking over the entire living room, which was huge, and the dining room was never used, so I wanted that too. I did not voice these wants, but when I had space, I took it in another building, in a barn, and moved everything up there, and I installed a pottery and a kill room, and then the other part of the downstairs part of the barn was for the weaving. The loft was for hay, and the lowest level was for a horse who lived there with me. In the meantime, I decided to study with the people, since I had a family, I decided to study with the people who actually wrote the books, whose books I admired. I found out wherever they were, and I studied with them. And that took me to Peters Valley and Potsdam and San Francisco and San Jose and Chicago and Pittsburgh and any place there was a person who was teaching, and I would spend several weeks with them or a class, and that's how I got my first skills. And I did that about every 2 years for quite a long time.
And you were, right from the start, impelled to do not just wearable art, but tapestries and hangings?
The first thing that I wove was a Rhea rug. And that makes for a rather easy warp. And I knew I had to keep it rather simple. But tying on several thousand knots is not easy, especially when you're a colorist and you love to have. I know that there's at least 380 colors in that one rug, because it grades from one color to the next.
When we all are sitting at this table, we see photographs of some enormous tapestries, wall hangings. At what point did you get to a scale like this?
I would say almost immediately. In order to do a large, very large work, and there is one that people can see from outside at the Buckingham Performing Arts Center. It's called Dynamic Interplay. And essentially, it's a rainbow and an environmental with crazy little water things falling down and a sun rising. And that doesn't make too much sense to have a rainbow and the sun rising, but we're not into time here. That one took about a year to do, and it was a commission by Marion Maslow, a wonderful, wonderful woman to work with. And that particular one, the main body is 22 feet wide and 13 and a half high, but there are extensions on the right and left that makes it about 15 and a half feet high. It takes up the whole wall in the lobby of the Buckingham Performing Arts Center at Wyoming Seminary.
Your work has been commissioned. You've had many a commission, and you're not just collected here in our region.
As far as Switzerland and on the other side, at least San Francisco, north into Canada and around the United States.
You're wearing something that you made?
It is a crochet form called Tunisian. And it is mostly Tunisian. It doesn't give as much as other crochet, so you can just decide to make something a certain size and it'll stay that way. And then it's got trim, which is an overhand stitch. It's sort of like a chain stitch.
You always have, no matter what you're wearing, an exquisite sense of color. You really are a colorist, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And also, as far as the human body is concerned, it's for adornment. And if you're choosing clothes, you are adorning yourself in some way. And it would bother me to go out with something that wasn't, in a sense, either complementary colors or analogous colors or quadratic, whatever it would happen to be.
We spoke about your tapestries and the sense of perhaps the environment inspiring the one at the Buckingham Performing Arts Center. But there's a narrative tapestry which is intriguing. Tell us the story of this wedding tapestry.
The bride-to-be wanted to commemorate their wedding, and they were a delightful couple. They lived on Greenwich Avenue in New York City. And they showed me a wall, and this is where they wanted it, so I designed it for the size of that wall. And midway through the making of it, I'd say three quarters done, they moved. And all I wanted to wonder was, is it going to fit in the new house, which is upstate New York? And to my delight, it did. But the making of this, because it was in a denomination that didn't allow photographs in the church, I went to New York several times, at least three that I remember, and sat in the pews and sketched the church. And then, not being able to photograph, I had to remember the colors. And the bride wanted to be the center of attraction, which is only right, with her husband. And then the other people should be sort of in the background. So I did what they asked. And since installing it in Upper New York State, they have moved again. I do not know where the tapestry is at this moment. So that was around the year 2000.
And again, the range of color, intense yellow, lavenders, whites, golds, blacks. How many colors?
I know that I purchased at least 350 different yarns. It's not as if it's just one color of gold, because it changes within an inch or 2 inches to another color of gold. There was a lot of frontal and back. So we have the forefront and we have the back stage of an entire altar.
When you thought about the kinds of work you do and have done in some of the newer pieces, how did you select and what will we see then in this show?
We will see a tapestry that is local, and it's called In and Of This Place. And that tapestry is a document of various histories in the Waverly area, now called Waverly Township. And it begins with the Iroquois, and it ends with a child in the front as a symbol of the future. There are also symbols of the 1920s, represented by a gentleman in a top hat, and a woman from the 30s, and her hat, of course, would be large, wide-brimmed, and covering up her eyes. So there's a lot of symbols in it, and I will have something on the walls so that you can look at the different symbols and understand what they are. And that is approximately 6.5 feet wide and over 3 feet high.
And a commission.
It was actually funded by the Pennsylvania Council on the Arts, the Waverly Community House, the NEIU 19.
So we'll see large-scale project and tied to the region in terms of themes. And what else?
There will be a lot of new work. They will be art to wear. I counted today there will be over a dozen vests of various types and colors and sizes, and there will be at least 15 new scarves and up to a dozen suits and coats.
And you teach in and out of your studio, you teach at ArtWorks. Where else?
Over the years, I've taught at Marywood when it was a college and Marywood when it was a university, LCCC, Luzerne County Community College, Penn State, Worthington, and that was perennial trees and shrubs. That was the gardener side of me.
And all of these opportunities to introduce people to this wonderful art that you love so much, that's as rewarding as most anything, is it? To see people come alive and work with and hold the yarn and have an idea. And
yes, I see that happen 3 days a week in my own studio. I have private students, and they come in either in the morning, in the evening, and they start from scratch. They start by picking out each individual yarn. I have a huge supply. I call it my color palette. I have cabinets all around the studio, and they merge from hundreds of colors, starting with yellow green into blue green into blue blue into blue purple into blue red, and then we go into the reds and so forth. And you can look all around the studio, and they are under color, less intensity lights, so nothing fades. And they go all the way into the blacks, and then there's a whole series of the many colors of whites that exist and the many colors of blacks that exist.
Like the Eskimos and the snow, right?
Yes, many.
So you learn from your students as well, do you, Jackie?
All the time, every day. It's amazing. They're learning, I'm learning, we learn together.
I learn kindness and love, magnified from my students, the way they interact with one another, help one another. There isn't a competition of I'm better than you are. We're all working within our range of capability.
And that's what you would hope, I would imagine, Caitlin, at the end of the day, that you go home and say, yes.
Yes, absolutely. it's definitely rewarding to see the instructors and to see the students and to see the merge, and just like you're saying, Peg, how helpful one might be with another student. And they take pride, you know, they're able to help because there's so many people that have been helping them their whole life. And here is a chance and an opportunity for them to give back. And, you know, there might be somebody that has a little bit more of a difficult time with fine motor skills, but somebody else is able to pick up that paintbrush and hand it to the person that's having a little bit of a difficult time. And that's why we do what we do. That's why we wake up every morning and start our days and say good morning to our folks.
Absolutely, yes. Growth. There is something in the heart of people that makes this not only important, but a part of being human.
Artist Peg McDade, Caitlin Harrison, Program Manager at Artworks, and Jacqueline Shattuck, Artworks Art Instructor, speaking with us about the Artworks Gallery and Studio in downtown Scranton in anticipation of the opening of the exhibition this Friday titled Peg McDade Fiber Artworks Then and Now, Art to Wear Tapestry, featuring the work of fiber artist and teacher Peg McDade, who also teaches at Artworks Gallery and Studio. The exhibit will be on display at the gallery, 503 Lackawanna Avenue in Scranton, through May 30th, with a Meet the Artist reception first Friday, May 5th, 6 to 9 p.m. The event is free and open to the public. For more information, on the web, artworksnepa.com, artworksnepa.com. That's Peg McDade, Fiber Artworks, Then and Now, Art to Wear Tapestry, with an opening reception first Friday, this Friday, May 5th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at Artworks Gallery and Studio, 503 Lackawanna Avenue in downtown Scranton. The event is free and open to the public. The gallery hours, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. or by appointment. For more information, on the web, artworksnepa.com, artworksnepa.com.